had a big week.
Oh, yeah?
How so?
I've been to two separate carveries. So wow. Two carveries in 3 days.
Blimey. Wow.
Living like a king.
Is it Toby Carveries, or do you want to name the brand? Or
one was a Toby Carvery.
Yeah.
One was called something like Cedar Mill Farm.
Okay, nice.
Giving it a kind of bucolic...
old people's home sort vibe. Of. Yeah, care home sort of.
So these are both midweek carveries as well.
Oh, yeah. I had a Tuesday nighter carvery and a Thursday nighter carvery.
It's an end of the wedge, isn't it? You're not far off hitting the old carvery for a working lunch soon, aren't you? And then after that, it's just...
It's getting there, isn't it?
It's three meals a day.
You must be quite the sight pulling up at the carvery in your open top Saab as well. Make quite an entrance, don't you?
Well, you can tell the staff are excited that a beautiful Scandinavian woman's about to arrive as I come through the door and say, can I have two Yorkshire puddings, actually?
Yeah.
All of the meats, please.
Exactly.
I can see the waiters, just their heads turning as you go by, and one of them's maybe got a bottle of Coke, at the top, sort of bangs off, doesn't it? Explodes off as you go past. And there'll be like a...
The gravy bubbling in the big vat starts bubbling even faster.
Yeah. There'll be a man on top of a ladder painting the ceiling with a roller with gravy. Right there, because they're
nearly losing his footing.
Yeah. He'll be losing his footing as you go by, won't he?
Someone lasciviously caressing a parsnip in the kitchens.
And the offal pounder with his offal pounding hammer. Mm-hmm. Be pounding the offal down as you go by. He starts pounding up his own arm, but he doesn't even notice. He's pounded his hand off. He doesn't even notice. He's watching you swish by.
The whole scene spattered with countless flecks of applesauce.
All the meats, please.
All the meats. And keep those roasties coming.
The key thing is that you can't go back to the meat station.
No. Really?
Yeah.
They're onto you there, are they?
You can only be there once.
Yeah. And that's where the false leg comes in, doesn't it? Because you can pack that false leg with as many... Can't you?
It's full of parsnips.
Parsnips. And they've been so mesmerised by the Scandinavian lady that the fact that she's got three legs, they haven't really clocked it, have they?
No one's going to say anything about her gammon goiter. They weren't sure what they saw when she first came in.
What are we talking, lunch or dinner in these restaurants?
Dinners.
Yeah.
A couple of dinners.
And have you sort of got it down pat now, I imagine, in terms of your routine? Like, is it all on autopilot? Do you have an approach, for example, beast of the field, beast of the sea, then beast of then
the beasto the parsnip?
Is it like the
beasto the sewers?
Is it the beak beasts, then the beasts of the snout, the beasts of the trotter,
beasts on the wing,
the curly tail beasts? Like, do you have a meat? Do you have a meat order?
So for me, Henry, it's always got to be
all the meats, please.
And sometimes, like, the people I was with on both occasions didn't have all the meats.
Yeah.
They selected a meat.
Yeah.
And I find that to be pathetic. You have to go for all the meats.
And you don't just want all the meats. You want them to then take those meats and spatchcock them into one another, don't you? And just fully pound it into a flat, dense brick of...
Disc.
Yeah. Disc. Then roll it up and sort of smoke it. A huge meaty cigar. There's different ways you can do it. It's not self-serve, is it? There's men with...
There's a meat master, so you have to...
Meat master.
You have to sort of negotiate with the meat master.
Yeah.
And I haven't yet... I don't think I've got it right yet. I've got to work out how you get the premium amount of meat out of this guy.
Oh, right. Is the meat master also in charge of the crackling, dare I ask?
There's no crackling, Mike. That's taken to the other side of town, to the rich people's houses.
Okay.
Sold door to door.
Mike, crackling would suggest some sort of variation in texture, colour, some sort of broad spectrum of palate experiences. That's not what's happening here. It's homogenous. Okay. It's wet.
Okay.
It's
good for the price.
It's good for the price. It's wet and warm, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's wet and warm, isn't it? That meat. It's not hot. Big. I don't think. We're not talking extremes of. We're talking a middle zone. We're talking a tone between grey and beige.
And Henry's right. It's wet, but also very, very dry.
Okay. It's wet and dry. It's wet but dry.
And volume is key, perhaps. Is it? Is that
volume is
the
king.
Key is volume.
Volume is king.
Okay.
And also, obviously, the wetter it is, the more volume you can slip in, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's not wet. It's wet in the sense, I'm guessing, in the sense that it's slightly slimy. Things slip off each other rather than wet in a kind of satisfying sense of inner moistness. Yep. So what you've got is wet sitting on dry. So, for example, if you pour water all over a plastic toy, for example, it sits on top. It doesn't go in. So in a way, it's wet and dry. If you pour water on something non-absorbent, it's wet and dry.
Like a pig.
If you pour water on something absorbent, it becomes wet. The two things mold. Whereas here, I'm imagining things are slipping off each other like a load of, a lot of wet, dry meat. Yeah. Skin's non-crispy. Skin is slightly wet, a bit slimy probably, isn't it? The skin's, I'm imagining. Everything is the colour of a 1970s sort of shirt. Shirt and tie combo. So it there's a palette from deep beige to mild pigeon. Is that right, Ben?
Yeah, you're nailing it. Yeah, pretty much.
The cabbage, is there cabbage?
Yeah.
Has it been boiled with the same degree of sort of focus and energy as Britain approached World War II?
Well, you're quite right there, because they were playing the speeches of Winston Churchill over a loudspeaker into the kitchen
to motivate
them to keep boiling.
Yeah, so boiled to the point where the proteins have dissolved into a, from a molecular level.
It's just pure, it's amino acids. It's just little,
it's just amino
it's
acids. Just
nucleotides.
Yeah. In fact, they'll even say, do you want amino acid? Do you want the amino acid mulch with that?
It's atomic. Do you want the atomic?
Yeah. Do you want the atomic?
Do you want the atomic veg?
Atomic veg.
The Americans have joined the war. We can boil even more cabbage.
What's the deal with your premium sauces and condiments? Because I'm assuming gravy is very much, pretty much piped in, right?
It's all about gravy. Yesterday when we got to the meat station, the man mistook us for two men that he'd had to deal with earlier who kicked off because they'd run out of gravy. And so he was looking quite sheepish and sort of said, oh, don't worry, guys, the gravy situation is sorted, but we'd just arrived. Mm. And we said, what's the gravy situation? He said, oh, thank God, sorry, I thought you were someone else. So I think two guys had gone in, they'd said, we've run out of gravy, and they kicked off big time.
Right. And so when you approach the meat master, do you approach the meat master with a bit of swagger then, Ben? Are you getting a bit puffed up in the carvery? Is there another layer of...
Well, it's like I say, I'm trying to work out the best tactics for getting the most meat out of this guy. And I think it's a slightly cloying chumminess I'm trying.
Okay, so you're not trying to alpha this person.
Well, maybe I should try and alpha him.
Keep it coming. Keep slicing.
You're not serving my grandma, mate. You're serving a man's man.
who may look like a beautiful Scandinavian woman
from a distance.
Ben, what I would do with him is, you want to be respectful, but I would throw in the odd neg just to keep him slightly off balance and wanting to impress
you. Of the meter of him.
Of the meat. Well, you do it how you want, but...
Of his mastery of the meat.
Yeah.
Nice bread knife, mate.
Ooh. Ooh, and he knows full well it's a carving knife.
Yeah.
Ooh, ouch.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the pig shank. There's no such cut.
Well, that's more just baffling him.
You could baffle him a bit. There's nothing wrong with baffling him slightly as well.
That's more like the Riddler would do. Yeah. Kind of agent of chaos.
Yeah. Dressed as a whimsical butcher.
Mm. Yeah. Or you could set him the odd riddle. It has hoofs, but no horn. It has a tail, but no dorsal fin. Name that meat.
It's the Toby Carvery chicken pig.
Our discontinued logo.
We tried to genetically engineer this in Shropshire and got in an awful lot of trouble.
Thank you to the people of Ludlow, now known as the Containment Zone. Let's turn on the beam machine.
Yes, please.
This week's topic, as sent in by Isaac from Bremen.
Thank you, Isaac.
is ghosts.
Ooh. Ooh. Feels remarkable that we've come this far and we haven't done ghosts somehow.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Has anyone ever seen a ghost here?
No.
No.
Neither have I.
Is that going to shut things down a bit quickly?
Because ghosts don't exist.
Time for your emails.
Or do they don't? No. Or do, no. Or, no, shut up, they don't.
But who's that? Oh, it's your dog.
It's the rats in your ceiling again.
But who's that in the middle of my... It's Mike. I mean, I haven't thought about ghosts for a long time, but I can get freaked out by horror films and stuff. In the past, I have been freaked out by ghosts in horror films, and I've had problems going to the loo in the night and stuff because I'm too scared. But not for quite a while, but... Do you know what I mean? They can wheedle their way into my psyche and get me feeling freaked out a little bit.
Really? But is it still worth it then? Because you like the horror genre, don't you?
I don't mind the horror genre.
Yeah.
I do like quite like the horror genre.
Well, the risk is worth the risk, you think?
Yeah.
Even if you frighten easily, let's say.
Yeah. I mean, I once saw a film that freaked me out so much, a horror film, that I couldn't leave my brother's flat. And I had to stay the night there, fully clothed. I couldn't take my clothes off.
Well, I should hope not, in your brother's flat.
Actually, you're right. It would have been inappropriate.
For a guest. It's the absolute basics.
That's absolute basics, isn't it?
You're so scared you couldn't even take your clothes off. What are you on about?
I couldn't even do my usual little dance. A little unrequested new dance.
What age was this? This suggests adulthood, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was definitely adulthood, but a long time ago.
What was the film? Everyone's going to want to know how... Because it's a bit like spicy food, isn't it? There's a bit of bravado in, like, how scary is the scary film that you like.
That's true, yeah. The film was actually a David Lynch film called Lost Highway.
I haven't seen that. Is it ultra weird?
It's ultra weird.
Yeah.
And that's what terrifies me.
Yeah, okay.
Just weird. Or basically faces that are a bit weird freak me out.
Oh, okay.
So, what? But somehow I managed to get through these recordings. Sessions. I actually, to be honest, this podcast started for me as to wean myself off my fear of being able to operate around weird faces. And that's why I always insisted on doing video calls from the beginning. And it's gone really well. I'm actually fairly relaxed with you guys. I mean, obviously I'm shitting myself, but...
Yeah. And you're not looking at pictures of our faces, are you? You've got Nigel Slater and Susan Sarandon up when we're talking.
That's right. I've got the Slater and Sarandon filters ramped up to maximum. I can get freaked out by the unworldly, by the uncanny, yeah.
I watch one horror film a year, and it comes around to Halloween, and I text my friend Tom, who knows about films, and I say, what horror film should I watch?
Mm-hmm.
And he basically prescribes me one every year.
Oh, really?
And I do really like it.
That's a good system. I need something like that, I think, because I very rarely get involved in horror. But like now, just once in a blue moon... It'll do the biz.
For the past couple of years, the ones that he's recommended are The Babadook.
Okay.
Which is very good.
That's good. I've seen that. To me, that's a classic eerie.
Okay.
Eerie horror, which is the best kind. Or that's the kind that really gets under your skin and freaks you out.
And then the other one, which is the best one, is Hereditary. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's freaky.
So freaky ones, yeah. I don't really want gore.
It's got one of the best surprise beheadings you'll ever see. Hasn't it?
It has got a really good surprise beheading.
It's got an incredible surprise beheading. It does this thing which is you're not supposed to do, which is a very main character gets beheaded within about 20 minutes. You're like, whoa, what the? What? It confounds everything you expect from a story, doesn't it? Yeah, so that's got creepy, because I think creepiness is key, isn't it, to good horror? Because a lot of horror is things just like the Halloween films, just like Psycho with a big chainsaw going around killing everyone.
Hmm.
Weirdly, that's not as frightening as a child with the face of a goat. you know what I mean? That's what really gets under your skin. And when I'm in the middle of the night, considering having a piss, I don't think to myself, though, there might be a man with a chainsaw in the corridor.
But you do think there might be a child with the face of a goat.
There might be a child with a face. Well, the child with the face of a goat will come in.
It's very hard to read their intentions, isn't it? Goats are famously inscrutable.
Especially as he's clipping and clopping across the ceiling above my head. Such strong hooves, such malevolent intent.
Mike, if you want to freak yourself out, watch Hereditary. It's really horrible.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
In a great way.
So, for example, what's more frightening to you, Mike? An orca with a machine gun?
Mm. Is he also wearing like a kind of 1920s gangster outfit as well? That's what I'm imagining. Like a Tommy gun style.
With a little cigarillo dangling out of the corner of his mouth.
Yeah.
Spats, yeah. Zoot suit, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Two-tone shoes and two-tone flesh because it's an orca. Two-tone body. Yes, yeah, the ultimate two-tone.
Two-tone Tony.
Yeah. Two-tone Tony and his two-ton Dodger. Coming at you, yeah, in an alley. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does that frighten you more? Or
a child's doll with the face of a goat. Okay. A music box with the face of a goat. Twiddly, twiddly, twirl, twirl.
A goat with the face of a different goat.
Of a different goat. Twiddly, twiddly, twam, twam. Clippity clopping across the wall with his excellent hoof.
Yeah?
With his terrifying hoof strength.
Because that's what frightens me.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's goat face every time.
It's goat face every
time.
Because
with the armed orca as well, you've seen enough Steven Seagals, you feel like you could at least have a go at doing a sort of Aikido style disarmament. Mm. Do you know what I mean? You've got a couple of 1, 2, 3, and I've got the Tommy gun. Do you know what I mean? I'm fenestrating that killer whale up against the bins.
And then suddenly you've done such a good job that now you're the one who's actually, weirdly, you're being paraded around at SeaWorld. What the fuck's happened? What? No. Well,
I'm not the one with the 2-ton Todger.
I'm in witness protection. I'm hiding from the mob. Entertaining literally tens of thousands of people a week.
They've put you in witness protection. Okay, Mike, the good news is the mafia are never, ever going to kill you. You're going to live a long and, well, in a way, fulfilling life. You're going in what we call extra deep cover.
And we say long, but actually the average survival is about 2 years and 3 months in a situation like this because it is an intense work environment.
And your dorsal fin will bend over.
Once your dorsal fin starts bending, you get too many R's from the audience, we will have to off you on the sly and just tell people that you've had a stroke. Sorry.
But you will play to more people than you could imagine compared to your current tour schedule, doing small venues in the Southwest.
You thought the Lyme Regis gig was big. Wait till you do San Diego Orca Fest 2025. Orcatron, the Orcamageddon files. It's going to be absolutely huge.
That's when all the orcas come together and create like a sort of huge man, isn't it? And sort of walks through the town in a massive exoskeleton.
And we can guarantee you can play one of his calf muscles. That's one of the biggest roles in the Orca Mega Man. But unfortunately, because you're undercover, you won't be able to make any profit from that.
Yeah, all of the money does go to reparations for the victims of Two-Tone Tony, who you're currently masquerading as.
And the irony is, you'll play to millions, but no one will know your real name.
Or species.
If you want to scalp your trainer, just do it on your own time, mate. Yeah, I don't want to know. If you need to do it, you need to do it.
That would make Free Willy a much better film if the child had tried to break out the orca from SeaWorld, and then from inside the orca is a bloke going, "No, I'm not really an orca, I'm just a bloke. I'm on witness protection.
I can't possibly survive in the Pacific on my own.
Yeah, exactly.
I need the 3 buckets of fish, please.
They give me KFC at night.
Please."
And I did find it hurtful when I scored a slightly lower average IQ than the other actual orcas. Yes, I did find it hurtful. But actually, it turns out they're all on witness protection as well. And a lot of them are in for more intellectually challenging crimes like tax stuff, VAT stuff.
Fraudsters on the whole. It's a lot of pyramid schemes, really.
Yeah. It's actually top brains. That crypto billionaire guy, he's in here. Yeah. I don't know why they put him in witness protection, but they have. Yeah, it turns out orcas have always just been a place to put people in witness protection. It's not an actual species.
They're just one-man craft, an amphibious craft.
It's a one-man amphibious craft. Mm. And obviously because they're criminals in witness protection, often when they escape and go into the wild, they will do things like gang up on seals because it's the criminal mindset, isn't it, expressing itself through the guise of a fictitious whale species that is in fact a witness protection device.
The hardest bit for you, Mike, is going to be learning how to go I make the right sounds.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not sure I've got the range.
Well, you can do squealing pig.
That's true.
That confuse
yeah,
people.
Can you parry that into
that's not people. That's not what people want though. If they've paid, you know, for the airfare to Orlando, right? This is their big. This is their big summer holiday, right? This is golden wedding anniversary level stuff, right?
Yeah.
They don't want the squealing pig.
I'd quite like to see an orca with the voice of a pig.
Ben, don't be overheard saying that in your local carvery, because the meat master will see that as a challenge and he'll make it happen. I tell you what, that Scandinavian lady, anything she says, I'll make it happen.
But she's just breathtakingly beautiful.
It's funny, as soon as she gets out of that Saab, it's just like a... it's like a mixture of Farrah Fawcett and... and Des Lynam. I can't explain it. I just fancy her. Is that good?
Wasn't your worst.
Yeah, it's not your worst. It wasn't good.
No, it's not good. No.
Come on. The way I think it works is the car, that Saab, it's had a beautiful Scandinavian woman driving it for so long that there's a kind of shimmer and essence of her that follows you around. So from what it looks like, you're a blonde, leggy Scandinavian woman.
I mean, the person who was driving around before me was my mother-in-law.
Who's going to be absolutely thrilled if she listens to this.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I thought you bought it off like an amazingly glamorous, like...
one of ABBA.
The kind of woman who'd be like Prime Minister of Finland or something, you know, like...
No, you've deployed your enhanced memory faculty.
I've used my enhanced...
That's what you've...
my enhanced memory syndrome. Was it not the Prime Minister of Finland?
It wasn't the Prime Minister in Finland. Yeah. And it wasn't the same year that you won the Boston Marathon either. It wasn't, yeah.
Oh, okay. It wasn't the same year, was it? No, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought those happened the same, but that was different, wasn't it? Yeah.
Or the night you serenaded Barack Obama with a soprano saxophone. None of that stuff. All of that stuff is enhancement.
It wouldn't have all happened in the same year, certainly.
No.
What really happened is that he played the recorder for John Major.
Yeah, and he didn't particularly enjoy it. One thing that always gets me in horror films is when you go into a room in a house and everything seems fine, except that in the corner of the room, there's a person wearing a Victorian sort of pyjamas or Victorian nightgown facing the corner.
Bonnet.
Mm-hmm.
Singing
something like,
itsy bitsy spider came up along my window. It had the face of a goat, a spider with the face of a goat, goat, ha, ha, goat, goat, ha, ha.
That sort of thing.
And then they turn to face you, but sort of rotating impossibly 180 degrees.
The head rotates, but not in the traditional y-axis. It rotates in the x-axis. The head rotates.
You don't see that very often, do you?
You don't see that very often.
Yeah.
Like a
horizontal rotisserie chicken.
Rotisserie chicken. Yeah. See, the head rotates. But also, another thing you don't see very often is the long hair stays in place.
Mm.
So all you do is you see the ears rotating and then a nose coming from underneath up through the hair.
The hands part. So the arms are now backwards. The hands now part the hair so that you can see the face.
No, the hands do two little skeletal hands pop out of the hair with a little winch and they twist it round and the hair parts like curtains.
Right.
And you know what you see in that face, the most terrifying thing you can see? It's your own face. If you were a goat. It's a goat version of your own face. But do you know what I mean? That's the most terrifying thing. It's like, what's the face going to be like? So,
yes.
Weirdly, if you wanted to mug me, right, rather than coming at me with a machine gun, the usual method.
Yeah. It's also a legislation loophole, right? No one can arrest anyone for coming at you with a goat, can they?
They can't. Exactly. Oh, the police have turned up. It's just an innocent goat.
It's just a guy brandishing the face of a goat.
It's a guy brandishing.
He's stuck on a child he's abducted.
Seems perfectly innocent, sir. if you want to come at me, right, with a machine gun, I'll be fine. What's the worst that can happen? It's like
you get torn to ribbons by the bullets.
You get torn to ribbons by the bullets. But that, Ben, that is fear, but it's not horror, you see. Because to me, horror is a different kind of fear. Fear of falling off a building, That's frightening because you'll die, or being shot, that's frightening because you'll die. But the child with the face of a goat, that's horror.
Yeah.
Because you didn't. So if you want to mug me, come at me in an alley facing the other way. Don't even face me. So back up towards me.
Yeah, or better still, wait, right?
Just wait. Wait for me to come. Mm-hmm. So stand in the alley facing the corner.
Mm-hmm. Singing.
Singing.
Itsy bitsy iPhone, I'd quite like to have your one. And if you can tell me the passcode, even better.
That kind of thing. Dressed up as a... as a Victorian, like show pony or anything Victorian.
Yeah. Governess.
A governess. Governess would be good. And I'll be transfixed with horror. I won't be able to move. You know, you'd be able to do what you like with me.
I think that the Victorian era is so related in my head to like creepiness, ghosts, all that kind of stuff. But actually living there at the time it kind of felt creepy.
I don't know. I also got I get the vague, probably inaccurate sense that during that time, just pretty much every other person was making a living out of doing fake seances and sort of ghost attacks in people's parlors.
Yeah.
That was one of the main jobs knocking about.
Yeah, that's true. Seance meister.
But they are good for terror. There's another Victorian. Well, it wasn't written in Victorian times. You know, have you seen The Woman in Black?
I saw in the theatre when I was a teenager, and it freaks me the hell out.
Same, exactly the same. Yeah. And it properly is that's the first time I ever watched something and was genuinely like, properly scared to my absolute marrow.
It's got a brilliant
creepy
trope bit, which is there's the bit where he goes into this room. Well, there's a thing where there's a room you're not supposed to go into. Always good in a horror.
You're very good, yeah.
The room you're not supposed to go into.
Yeah.
What's behind the door? What's behind the hair on the face? What's behind,
things that you can't see. What is it? Mm. That's frightening. Rather than just a big whale with a machine gun coming at you.
There's one of those doors on Toby Carvery. You should never go through it.
Don't go in. Private staff only. Fire escape only. This door is alarmed.
Unless you want to know the secret of all the meats, don't go into that room. For what you will see, you will never forget, and nor will it ever forget you. It's the goat with the body of a chicken and the legs of a pig and the arms of a whale and the head of a cow.
The arse of a backup generator.
It's all the meats in one animal. We've created the mega meat beast.
His name is Toby.
His name is Toby. And all he can do is squeal.
And piss gravy.
He pisses hot, hot gravy. He actually shits really, really quite tasty, nice meatballs. Wish yourself an Italian restaurant down the road, because you don't do meatballs in Carveries. Just one of those things. You can't carve a ball, can you? Is that true of Carveries? There's no sausages, none of the minced meats. There's no sausages, no meatballs. It has to be carvable.
In Carvery 1 this week, I did have... I went up and the guy said, "Do you want pigs in blankets?" I said, "Yes, please." He said, "Have you paid extra for them?" I said, "No, I didn't realise that there was a surcharge." He said, "Don't worry, we're about to close. You can have 6 of them."
So why did he ask you in the first place? Was he toying with you?
I think he was, yeah.
He was testing your mettle, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He wanted you to know about his largesse.
Yeah.
What's the point of going less than 6, frankly?
What I'm picking up from the Carvery vibe is I'm not picking up strong, good for a first date vibes. There's something incredibly transactional about it. And there's something like really raw about. There's something like, you know how going out for a meal can be a special occasion. You just go, nice treat.
Well, there's a new place we could try.
When you go in, the first thing says, "Are you the person who's angry about the gravy?" No, no, it's fine. Calm down, it's cool. Okay, oh God, thank God, we thought you were the person who was angry about the gravy.
Have you paid the surcharge that lifts the meal into something a bit more interesting than it usually is?
Have you paid the meat surcharge? Have you paid the bacon tithe? No, well, I tell you what, special deal, we'll let you off. It's all quite administrative, isn't it? It feels like a sort of feels like the equivalent of being on the phone to someone about council tax or something, but a bit in meat form.
No, it's more like being in the court of a powerful king.
Right. Within which there are a series of fiefdoms.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
You just need to know your way around it.
You have to know how to handle Baron Parsnip.
Okay. So it's a feudal system.
Yes. Yeah.
And are you like a squire? No, what's your sort of status?
You're a serf throwing yourself on the kindness of the lords and kings.
Okay. And they hand down their meat to you.
They hand down the meat, exactly.
Okay. And you sort of, you go to them, a bit like visiting the king when you make your application. You visit the meat master. So it's equivalent of going, "Me lud, me fields have problems because of me neighbours." Because, you know, like in the old days, you go in front of the king and you'd tell him your problem. You're like, "Oh, my neighbours are, they're just ransacking my onion fields every day."
Yes. Yeah. The French crows. The French have sent the crows once more.
So then the meat master will take pity on you or whatever and give you some meat.
Give you six pigs and blankets.
So what were we talking about before then?
Women in black.
Women in black.
Women in black.
Long black hair in the world of ghosts. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Bob. You don't get a lot of ghosts with a bob. Nothing you can do with a bob. It's just not frightening.
They've never got like a severe haircut, have they? Or a kind of pixie cut?
Don't get a lot of wolf cuts or mullets, do you?
No.
Rarely see a ghost rocking the Rachel. Either,
you don't. You never get a creepy Rachel. So in Women in Black, right? Do you remember what was so brilliant about that show was it's a tale within a tale, isn't it? Because he's telling the tale
to an actor.
To an actor. And the central sort of, well, what I'm going to do is a big spoiler, huge spoiler here. So massive, massive spoiler alert. He's telling the story of how he went to this place and there was a ghost or something. But what happens is, and there is a ghost, right?
Yeah.
So there's three people in the cast, I guess. There's a person he's telling the story to. Is that person played by someone?
Daniel Radcliffe.
that's quite damning for Daniel Radcliffe. Sorry, Daniel Radcliffe. You were definitely there. So Daniel Radcliffe, he's being told the tale, and someone's telling the tale to him.
Yeah.
And then so he's telling the story of how he went to this country house and there was a ghost, and then there's someone playing the ghost who's like a sort of
white-faced,
yeah. Creepy face and black gown sort of type person. And then at the end of the story, the sort of huge mega twist. So the guy says to him, great anecdote, by the way, thanks for telling me that. And that person you had, you know, acting out the ghost during the anecdote was really good as well.
Ah.
And it's like, there was no other person playing out the ghost in the anecdote. That means the ghost was actually here during the anecdote. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Mike, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. So I've seen the play. I said that at the beginning.
And it's just weirdly, you looked quite bored, so I thought we understand. I quite often mistake boredom for not understanding them. But what's funny about that is a couple of things. One is, who the fuck tells an anecdote and hires an actor to play a character in the anecdote? It's really weird. If either of you did that, I would definitely flag. I wouldn't wait till the end of a two-hour anecdote with an interval before bringing it up.
Well, you'd assume it was a ghost from the off, wouldn't you?
You'd have to assume it was a ghost from the off, and I'd be like, ghost can't hurt me. It can just go through me. I mean, it doesn't have the face of a goat.
It's a payday, isn't it?
It's a payday. Yeah, let's enjoy it. The other thing, which is quite clever in the story, is the thing about the ghost in the story within the story is when you see the ghost, it means you're fucked, basically. So the fact that ghost has been there means either Daniel Radcliffe, I think it means that
they're going to die.
Daniel Radcliffe, or will never play a... Will never be in a really, really good film ever again. That's harsh. But the thing that... So essentially, the story is about a ghost who sort of appears in the telling of an anecdote about it. It appears in the actual telling. But what then the double twist that's quite fun is that when you look in the programme for the actual play, there's no one listed playing the ghost. So actually, in theory, it could be that the ghost appeared tonight during the play, and it is real. Do you see what I mean?
The thing is, though, Henry, that's actually because Rupert Grint was doing it as a favour.
Rupert Grint.
But he hadn't told his agent.
He didn't want to commit to the whole run because he still thought he had it looking for being the next Bond. he was still holding out for Bond. Because I met someone, right, who was in the Woman in Black.
Which means you're about to die, right?
Which means I'm about to die. He told me what it was like being on tour with a Woman in Black. Genuinely, right. This happened. And at the end of the anecdote, I said to him, bloody hell, that was good the way you got the ghost to come and play during your anecdote. But actually, for anyone who's been watching this online, Ben, I don't know how you were able to do this and knew we'd probably come up. Anyone who's been watching the video online, it's been cool that Ben, you've had the ghost character behind you during the whole record. That's been fun, isn't it?
Oh, God. It's Rupert Grint with the face of a ghost.
Also, just to be clear, you can't watch this online.
Can't watch it online.
For that very reason.
For that very reason. But the other thing I think which is annoying about it is that if you're in The Woman in Black, playing The Woman in Black, there's no... I think for equity reasons, you can't get paid, or certainly not paid properly.
Because they just get repeatedly exercised in every new market town you visit.
Exactly. And there's no proof. You can't actually prove to anyone that you've been in The Woman in Black.
For 12 years.
It's basically a CV black hole, isn't it?
Exactly. And you can even say to a friend, come and see me tonight in The Woman in Black. If you meet someone, or a friend, come and see me. They'll go and see The Woman in Black. But even they'll never be sure it was actually you. Do you know what I mean? There's no way of knowing.
Have either of you seen the Radcliffe movie version?
No, nor have I read the book. I've only saw the play.
How could that premise work in a movie? It feels like it couldn't work.
Yeah, that's why I don't understand either. I've not seen it either, but it feels like a show that you need someone to jump out at you in a theatre. Mm.
I think that's why it's got a big scene at the end where he's fighting orcas with a machine gun. They had to slightly change it at the end.
It's time to read your emails.
Yes, please.
If you'd like to send an email, send it to 3beansaladpod@gmail.com.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress, like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your hoof.
My beautiful horse.
Let's start with this email from someone who describes himself as the Great Northern Beanhead.
Crumbs.
Wow. That's the Anthony Gormley sculpture, isn't it?
And I think from the content of the email, it will become clear why they want to remain anonymous. Oh. Okay. Hi, Beans. If you cast your minds back to when ads were introduced to the podcast, the first one you recorded together was a recruitment campaign for new magistrates in England and Wales.
Yeah.
I was inspired and submitted my application.
Oh. What?
After a long selection process, I was recently appointed and last month swore an oath to uphold the office of magistrate.
Oh, wow.
And now I'm taking you down. You don't know what you've created.
It's the first Supreme Court appointment by the Beans.
Wow. It's taken us longer than we thought. We always knew we'd get there, didn't it? It's taken us a while. It's always something we aim to do.
to overtake the judiciary.
Yeah. It's always been the long-term goal.
I think we should explain... To listeners, I think, outside the UK, they don't get our adverts. Mm. So we did an advert that encouraged people to apply to be magistrates. And if you're not from the UK, you won't know what a magistrate is, potentially. It's basically a kind of judge, isn't it? Low-level judge?
Yeah. You don't have to be a lawyer, do you? You are drawn from the local population. And they work in threes, don't they?
They work in magistrates three.
Do they?
I think they're always in three, no.
They're not?
Okay. I think it depends on the
It's one or three, isn't it? Not two. I think no,
is it so odd numbers?
It's odd numbers.
Odd numbers.
It's odd numbers.
They work only in odd numbers.
Only in odd numbers. Primes. Only in primes.
It's only primes.
Yeah. It's 1, 3, 7, 9, 11, 14.
9.
74. 97.
Brace yourself. Brace yourself, Henry. Because it's coming.
A magistrate, as I understand it, is judge and jury.
Yeah, and executioner.
And executioner. And it's basically sort of Judge Dredd. If people don't know magistrates, if they know the Judge Dredd comic book character.
Yeah.
It's a version of that, but just with, imagine if Judge Dredd's armor-laden, missile-heavy mega motorbike could also fly. Yeah.
And was being operated by a retired teacher.
And had the power of the British state behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think you see a magistrate if, for example, I don't know, sort of low-level crimes, is it?
Bit of fly-tipping, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of like, crime is never glamorous. Except for diamond theft, which just is.
Yeah, come on, jewel heist.
Jewel heist are.
Yeah.
Running an illegal craps game.
I'll run a speakeasy. Sure, yeah. No problem.
Art forgery.
Yeah.
Very glamorous. Yeah. Filling your ass with narcotics and flying to Monaco.
Quite glamorous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Secretly adding supernumerary nipples to famous old Greek sculptures. it's not that often reported. Call that semi-glamorous. Crime is generally not glamorous, but your magistrate crimes, they're not your big hitter crimes, are they?
No.
If you're in a magistrate's court, you're not going down for like 10 to 15, are you? You're getting a fine. Slap on the
I
wrist.
Think maybe this might be bollocks. I think a magistrate can't send you to prison.
Right.
I think that sounds fair enough.
Yeah.
That sounds plausible and fair enough to me.
I reckon you end up seeing a magistrate if you were so bloody minded that you just decided to not pay the fine. Actually, no, because the fact is I was only in the box because the van was turning right and he'd stalled. So it's when you've decided to fight it. You've gone, you know what, darling? No, it's not. I'm not going to pay the £75 fine. I'm going to bloody do this.
So go to the magistrate, so I'm going to get a £300 fine instead, is what I'm going to do.
It's caused quite a lot of upheaval to the family.
I'll be forced to cancel a holiday in a sheet in France, because that's when the court date is, and I have to go.
I get so stressed that I become addicted to vapes, even though I'm in my late 50s. I know. Constantly.
Rhubarb and custard flavour, which sickens you.
I smell of custard all the time. And people think it's just because I'm eating a lot of custard. They don't realise it's cool custard because it's vape custard. They just think I'm an old man who eats loads of custard. And they assume I'm breathing custard gas as a sort of, as a kind of medical symptom.
And then I wouldn't stop vaping custard during the magistrate's hearing, so he kicked it up to Crown Court level.
And also, it turns out that breathing out custard gas in a court of the land is one of the only things you can still be sentenced to death for. They still haven't taken away. It's an old statute.
It's burning the Queen's docks.
When I said, sorry, I'm just vaping custard gas, they heard I'm doing mustard gas. Yep. And
for that reason, I've been court-martialed as well.
They've shut down 3 miles square of central London around the Old Bailey. It's cost the economy £4 billion.
Long story short, I'm getting hanged.
And I have asked my final meal to be just custard, actually, yes, because I've also become addicted to actual custard as well as the custard vape.
So the Great Northern Beanhead writes, I also swear to you, the beans, that I do solemnly, sincerely, and truly declare that I will deliver bean justice
very good
to all manner of people and after the laws of this realm, without fear or favour. Nice pun.
Nice. Lovely.
Nicely done.
Affection or ill will. Kind regards, the Great Northern Beanhead.
Very good.
Fantastic.
Love, we've got a magistrate in our pocket.
It's great. Great. He also writes, P.S., listeners who find themselves guilty of a crime in the Yorkshire area will get a discount on their sentence when cutting over the presiding justice as they deliver their remarks and shouting Pompidou. Not including thefts of mockers or hot chocolates.
Excellent stuff. So corruption has crept in instantly, isn't it? As soon as we get a little tiny little bit of power, the beans and then corruption follows instantly.
Great. That's wonderful. Congratulations, Great Northern Beanhead.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's really exciting. Well done.
Yeah, and by all means, send us a photo of your hat, your gavel, the special boots, either of the belts, the rucksack,
the justice holster,
the justice holster, any of the accoutrements,
the shame gantry.
Yeah, love to see a photo of that.
The bit I don't understand, I'd like an email from our magistrate about this. You know, like they go through the whole court process.
Yeah,
you know. If it's one with the jury, there's all that. There's all the bits and bobs, and they go through it all. And then at the end, there's a bit where just the judge not only hands down the sentence, which might be like 10 years in prison, which is bad enough, he then just gives them a little bollocking. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Icing on the cake bollocking.
Yeah. I'd be like, mate, I'm going to prison for 10.
Yeah,
like,
don't need it, mate. You've made your point. You know, you've made your point with the bird. Yeah. I'm doing 10 to 15.
Doing serious bird here, mate.
Leave it out.
Honestly.
I can do this bollocking myself. I'm going to be doing it in the van all the way to to HMB Wandsworth.
But getting patronised by a school teacher type.
That's what caused all this in the first place.
Exactly.
If anything, people like you rubbing me up the wrong way.
Now, will I be able to vape this custard in prison?
Or will I have to make moonshine custard vape in my cell? Out of my cellmate's turds. What's it to be?
Or you have to try to see if you can persuade relatives of yours to come to conjugal visits with an arse full of custard.
Oh, We have had an email from Jonathan in Bremen.
Hello, Jonathan.
This
Hello.
Is on the topic of our most radioactive listener.
Oh, ooh. Yeah.
It runs and runs.
Mm. Disappointing. Well, not disappointingly, but troublingly, I would say, it runs and
yes.
runs.
Yeah, so yes. many of our listeners have had heavily radioactive experiences that I did not yeah. think yeah. would be the case. So, as a contender in the most glow-in-the-dark competition, here is my entry. I once failed the radiation test to be allowed to leave the Chernobyl exclusion zone.
Oh my
Bloody
God.
Hell, that's bad.
After a fun-packed day trip to the exclusion zone, which has testing stations 5 kilometres and 30 kilometres from ground zero, Bloody I got hell. Out of the car and popped into the station to tackle the radiation detector. This is basically an electronic gate that opens once you get the all clear from the body scan.
Sounds fun, doesn't it? Sounds like a nice, fun, relaxing thing to be experiencing on holiday. You pop yourself in the electric gate, get the body scan, and you're free to leave. Yeah. Sounds really fun.
There's no staff for 70 miles.
Yeah. And any owls you see are, in fact,
radioactive flying wolves.
They're radioactive flying
with the face of a goat. A couple of people in front of me passed through with no problems, but my attempt resulted in a siren and flashing lights. The nice Ukrainian man who ran the station showed me out of the station the way I'd come in. With a strangely calm resignation, I was quite prepared to have all my clothes incinerated and face a cold water hosing down whilst being interfered with by a particularly stiff, bristled broom. But no, that kind man showed me how to rub the soles of my shoes on the grass outside until that particular speck of strontium that used to live in the core scuffed off. Blimey. On returning to the machine, I passed as clear. But I did notice the man pressing a button on his control console, which I've always assumed was some sort of override, as he couldn't be bothered dealing with the situation.
Yeah, the paperwork with having to deal with a radioactive tourist. I mean, no one can be bothered with that on their watch, can they? Just tend to wipe his shoe and... Yeah.
Just get him back to Gatwick.
Get him back to Gatwick. Let them deal with it.
So I think, Jonathan, on balance, you're probably still highly radioactive.
Yeah, you should at least get rid of those shoes, mate. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, yeah. He writes, I kept those shoes for years as my lucky shoes, which probably wasn't the best idea thinking about it now. Regards, Jonathan. Dear Beans, this is from Samantha, Max and Gracie from Pontypridd.
Very nice.
We've been enjoying the podcast so much that my 9-year-old daughter, brackets an arty type, mm-hmm. recently covered the house in 3 bean salad doodles while I was out walking our dog.
Awesome. Yeah.
I attached photos of Gracie's drawings. Mike has been Dracula'd. Henry is now Henry Potter. And Ben is the majestic Ben Beauty with the glossiest of manes.
This is excellent.
She would be thrilled to get a mention. All the best, Beans.
Wow.
This is good stuff. Oh, yeah. Oh, Ben Beauty is particularly lovely.
Oh, Ben Beauty, you're a horse.
Yes.
Yeah.
Count Mikula.
This is superb work, Gracie. This is excellent. She's graffitied everything in the house, as far as I can make out. There's all kinds of like notes and notices. And
I like her simple but bold use of colour, you know. This could be a time for a rebranding of the Beans. I quite like that yeah. pink and green.
Gracie, this is outstanding.
Lovely.
She draws a very fine bean, I will say. I mean, she draws a very fine bean.
She really does draw an excellent bean.
Nice one, Gracie. Keep it up. Not least because we could do with someone maybe a bit more reliable with the artwork.
Yeah, fair enough.
You seem like, you know, you're the right sort.
Yep, point taken.
No hard feelings.
No.
Okay, thanks to everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
If you'd like to do so, patreon.com/3beansalad. Now, we normally at this point play the Patreon jingle, which is one that I made, but we're going to play a version sent in by one of the listeners. This is from Jesse.
Oh, brilliant. We don't often get the Patreon jingle versions, do we?
No, exactly. Jesse writes, hi, Beans.
Hello, Jesse.
I've been listening since day one.
Nice.
Very good.
Nice.
And we do consider that to be day one.
Yeah. In the bean calendar.
In the bean calendar. Yeah.
The Beanian calendar.
Beanian calendar is day one, and it's a calendar which it's non-cyclical, isn't it? So it's just the days accumulate. That's it.
Yeah.
So now we're on day probably 10,000 or something. No, 1,000.
Yeah, about 1,000.
About 1,000. Yeah.
Oh yeah, we don't keep track of it, but yeah.
It's not exact. It's not an exact calendar.
It's a vibe-based calendar, isn't it?
It's much more vibe-based than normal calendars. Yeah.
So Jesse writes, Happy New Year. I've been listening since day one. I'd like to humbly submit my modern metal version of the Patreon jingle.
Mm,
great.
Hopefully it can intimidate some more people into signing up. Brilliant. So, here we go. Very good.
Oh, yeah, that voice.
Jesse, you've got the voice of a kind of 80s horror film.
Yeah, quite appropriate for this episode.
It's proper bowels of hell stuff.
It was, wasn't it? It was like one of those skeletons playing a guitar you get on, is it Iron Maiden t-shirts?
Yeah. Isn't he called Eddie, I think the character?
Is it Eddie? That was like the voice of Eddie.
Do check out our Patreon. If you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out from Mike in the Sean Bean Lounge.
You do indeed.
Mike was last night.
Certainly was. Because, of course, it was the...
Well, it was complimenting each other's dogs night, wasn't it?
It was, which is one of my favourite nights.
Yeah, it's a feel-good one, isn't it?
And here's my report.
It was complimenting each other's dogs night last night at the Sean Bean Lounge, which started on a high note, as Al-Sal-Sal's Alsatian had a wet leaf stuck on its arse which reminded Rosie Lloyd of a 17th century religious painting. Jacob Fry's Australian cattle dog drew praise from Patrick O'Connell for vomiting up a moist but otherwise undamaged tennis ball. The ball itself was then celebrated by Comedy Gremlin's Maltese, who chewed it, Oliver Bayer's Borzoi, who pissed upon it, and by Gareth Canterford's Bichon Frise, who made love to it. Kirsten Rennie's Chow Chow was praised by Paul Garner for its work ethic, while Ross Wakefield's Airedale received notes and dispatches from Jack Robson for its ability to independently wash its own muddy paws in a sink, provided the sink was equipped with an electric hand soap dispenser. Nick Brown's Beagle was voted worst trained in a way that's actually adorable, while Bix's Doberman was voted worst trained in a way that's going to repel burglars. Miriam Van Melwijk was in charge of assessing and complimenting laps this year, with Thomas Morgan's Belonka taking home best lap dog, Joe Groves's Cocker Spaniel winning strongest forelap, and Helen Barclay's Rottweiler winning glossiest hind lap, earning it a place in the Olympic team. Andy Garby's Affenpinscher received kind words from Di Thomas for deciding to fly less, while Ian Marriott-Smith's Doggo Argentino's Bark was praised by Tim Corkill as it reminded him of a two-stroke lawnmower engine his great-uncle's moped sounded like when Mark Hemingway did an impression of it. Marlowe's Golden Retriever ended up complimenting Dorcas's Hungarian wired-haired Vizsla directly and without a middleman, so Marlowe and Orcus opted to compliment each other on each other's ability to stack up to two pennies on the back of their elbow and catch them with the hand of the same arm. Lee Sarah's old Croatian sighthound was described by Andrew as having nice fur. This was referred to the compliment ombudsman, NTD MacDonald, who determined it was in fact a backhanded compliment and therefore grounds for public admonition. This took the form of a sustained canine bollocking in the Sean Bean Castigation Theatre by Lauren Smith's Hyena, Super Crunz's giant screaming Cumberland sausage dog, and Louise Fix's Tigoodle, a tiger poodle cross with a weight of 736 kilos and a life expectancy of 4 days. Thanks all.
Right, that's the show. We'll finish off with a version of our theme tune sent in by one of you lot. This one is from John from Bremencaster.
Hello, John.
Please find enclosed my UK garage-themed theme tune version, which is described as three bean salad theme, brackets, the premium greasy pretzel shard garage snacks remix.
I've got a thing. I've never understood what garage means in terms of music, and I don't think I ever will. But I'm fine with that.
Well, it's time to be educated, Henry.
Might be the scales are about to fall from your eyes.
Nah, you're all right. It's fine. It's one of those things. I haven't learned it by now. I don't need to net by now. I don't need to know it at all. Do you know what I mean? It's one of those things. I've got by fine. I'm also not 100% sure what R&B is. It seems to be various different things sometimes at different times. Mm, yeah. I'm all right with that as well.
Well, do email in if you're a Grammy Award-winning R&B artist.
Yeah.
But we do need... I want it to be that.
Yeah, I'll take it from someone Grammy level.
Grammy nommed?
I'll take a Grammy nom.
Right, until next time. Goodbye.
Bye. Is this garage? Is it always like this?
Beans, deep cut, welcome to the first three bean salad. Rat Mike, Benjamin, also
Bluebell. Is that Pam?
Yeah. Also
Henry Packer.
Garage, welcome to the first three bean salad. Rat Mike, Benjamin, also
Bluebell. Henry Packer.
Pam?
Yeah.
Gigantic mechanical crab.
In some movement.
Who has evolved into a crab?
That's all moving towards thinking.
Reading out the big gun. Smeared in goose fat. Clickety clack. Rhythmic.
Crab sticks.
Glossy sort of sheen on things.
Guitar break.
It's a classic Stratocaster shape. Maple fingerboard. Z-shaped coils. Very exciting. Who's that made by?
Cut out mine eyes!
In the 90s.
First dance of the season.
It does the minimum.
Very strong.
Beans. That has really perked me up. I think.
I think you're a garage fan now, Henry, right?
That was fucking good.
That was sensational.
That was brilliant. Is Garage always like that? Does it always feature us three?
Thank you, John of Bremencaster.
That was really brilliant.
Fantastic.
Thank you.